Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes with a great follow at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, Wisconsin. And we are very grateful for the support from our primary sponsors at Owner's Box. We'll tell you a little bit about them later. But off the top, AJ, I would like to review the Hall of Fame class from 2020. We finally got around to celebrating them here in Toronto last week. And I'll leave it to you to lead off with the first member of that hall. We'll make comments about all of them and tip of the cap to everybody involved.
Yeah, so first name that we'll talk about is Ken Holland, the longtime general manager of the Red Wings, currently with the Oilers. Obviously, you know, the Red Wings were, he was part of their 25-year stretch of making the playoffs every year. Says a lot about the type of team that he was able to build. I definitely think navigating everything pre-cap, it was represented its own challenges compared to nowadays with post-cap. There's no easy way to do it, but clearly built the Detroit Red Wings into, you know, perennial contenders.
Absolutely, AJ. And of course, he was mentored by a friend of this show, Jimmy DeVellano, who, for my money, is still one of the best GMs in hockey history. Maybe even better. I rate him better than Holland. He won 8 Stanley Cups in his career as a pro. But Kenny Holland learned from the best. Scotty Bowman was part of that mix in Detroit as well. You mentioned the long run of consecutive playoff appearances. I don't think we'll see that happen again for a long time. The sport is too competitive and hard to sustain under the salary cap these days. So that's an unprecedented run, in my opinion. Next up, we'll highlight Marian Hossa, AJ. This guy scored 525 goals and 609 assists and was part of three Stanley Cup wins in Chicago. But he missed out on a couple more because of trades that moved him from Detroit and Pittsburgh in years where those teams were right around the cup contention. You brought that up to me earlier in the show, and quite famously missing out on three straight cups in a row for three different teams. You might want to fill our listeners in on that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, actually signings, not trades there, but he was with Pittsburgh for – their cup run in 08-09, which I do believe was or 07-08 rather. That one I do believe was a trade acquired by the Penguins. Went all the way to Stanley Cup Finals where they lost to Detroit. Then the next year he opted to sign with the Red Wings in order to win a Stanley Cup. His words, not mine. And then, of course, that was the second year that those teams squared off against each other. And he found himself on the losing side of that one again. But fortunately for Marian Hossa, he got it right after that, joining Chicago. And would play, as you said, in a third straight Stanley Cup final that year, finally winning it with Chicago, going on to win two more from there. Next Hall of Fame guy, we'll talk about Jarome Iginla. Most notably known for his time with Calgary, 15 years spent there. Spent a few stops with Boston, Pittsburgh, Colorado, and L.A. after that. You know, I think you're talking about a four-time All-Star, Richard Trophy winner. Like, that might be one of the best guys to not win a cup, to be perfectly blunt about it. You know, there's obviously several names out there that fall into that category, but I would certainly consider Jarome Iginla up there among those class of guys who fantastic careers, but just unfortunately couldn't put it together on the cup side.
No question. Although he can point to two Olympic gold medals for Canada, so I'll happily point that out. But he had
good. Yeah, this won't matter down here, Paul. I couldn't care less about that.
Well, I remember both of those tourneys very fondly for the great outcome. So maybe you kind of blacked it out of your memory. Next up, we have Kevin Lowe. This guy was all around the Stanley Cup. 5 cup wins in his 13 years with Edmonton, and he added a 6th with the Rangers in 1994, and he burned me at the Hockey Hall of Fame speech that he did, AJ, because he mentioned maybe the Leafs should try and sign some of us old Edmonton Oilers and finally end their cup winless streak. So that was quite a shot across the bow right in Toronto at the ceremony. He, for his part, was primarily a defensive defenseman of note. He also was Wayne Gretzky's longtime roommate. He accumulated 432 points in 1,254 games. I mean, how can you not score a bunch of points when that team was scoring around 400 goals a year? But one of the finest defensive defensemen in hockey history. And it's kind of neat to see that type of player get the nod in the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not just about points after all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's at some point to what you're saying, Paul, you have to look at you know, the victories, right? So yeah, the point totals might not be there, but there's a reason this guy is a, you know, six-time cup winner. He doesn't just, you know, he didn't stumble into these teams and add nothing for them to win the cup. So certainly good to see him added to the hall there, and then you know, acknowledging you know, his career.
AJ, let me jump in, AJ. I'm going to take the next one because you have panned Team Canada already. So I'll spare you, spare you from insulting my country again. Kidding, of course. But Kim St. Pierre was the goalie for Team Canada on three Olympic gold winning teams and five World Championship gold medal clubs too. Listen to the goals against average here. It's almost like soccer soccer stats when you consider 117 goals against average and a 93.9 save percent. Now, granted, the competition is a little thin once you get past the two powers in Canada and the United States, but other teams in other countries are closing that gap. But to her credit, Kim St. Pierre was the best goalie that I ever saw in the female game donning Canadian colors. So kudos to her for joining this class. And finally, AJ, Doug Wilson, what do you say about him?
Well, yeah, I think for, you know, for me, being a bit younger of age, I only really recognized Doug Wilson as general manager of the Sharks and kind of his front office career. But, you know, you look back, you're talking about a guy that's a three-time All-Star, won the Norris Trophy back in the 81-82 season, and really had a phenomenal 16-year career, mostly with the Blackhawks, appeared in 1,024 games, 827 points to show for it. So, you know, for a defenseman, those are really good numbers, especially, you know, going back into, you know, that era. Nowadays, we expect defensemen to rack up points, but that wasn't always the case, and really put together a phenomenal career on the ice and continues to put together some decent teams with the Sharks.
And AJ, I am old enough to remember Doug Wilson's playing career. This guy had the most feared slap shot in the game during his time with Chicago. And he was a lock to get a goal if he could unleash that weapon with a clear shot on goal. It seemed like he did it against the Leafs so many times in my memory. And just a real class act on and off the ice. So congratulations to him and all of the people that made the class of 2020, finally getting to celebrate them a year after they were announced. And I wonder how that's going to work about catching up with the year and the class, AJ, going forward. But congratulations to this group, all very, very accomplished with their exceptional careers and worthy recipients of this honor. With that, we will swing into our weekly look. We're now 5 weeks into the season already, AJ, and we got a bit of a book on several teams and several players that I'm going to highlight with you, some breakout players, and also we'll probably find some players that have really underperformed along the way. So let me start with the look at the Anaheim Ducks. This is a team that we have noted was very, very low-scoring club for the last couple of years, but they've reeled off 8 straight wins because not only are they getting the exceptional goaltending from John Gibson, who allowed only 7 goals against with the 3 wins that he registered last week, but they're getting great performances from some youngsters who are really showing the way alongside Ryan Getzlaf, who led the club with 6 assists last week, but Trevor Zegras, 4 goals and 1 helper, and Troy Terry just continues to wear out goalies with 2 more goals and 3 assists. He's one of our first guys that I'll highlight finally for a breakout season. And joining him in the scoring parade, Adam Henrique, who is finding his groove now right behind Getzlaff and Zegras. They've got a lot of options at center. They're going to move one of these guys to the wing on a regular basis to make room for all of them. Some of that room was created by an injury to Max Comtois, though, an upper body hurt, so he'll be sidelined for a bit. And they're also getting great work from a veteran defense. Cam Fowler's having an outstanding start to his season, added another 3 points last weekend, as did Hampus Lindholm.
In Arizona, they're going to get some good news here on the injury front. They've had a number of guys that have been pretty banged up for quite a while here, Christian Fisher being one of them, Anton Strowman, Johan Larson, but they're going to get Ryan Zingle back tonight. That'll be his first game since about late October. Now, his fantasy numbers were pretty grim before the injury, was goalless in his first six games with just seven shots on net. So you'd like to see him maybe start putting the puck on net. But if he can find his game, which he has shown glimpses of in the past, I mean, this is a guy with two 20-goal seasons under his belt, though it hasn't been since 2018-19 since he did that. So they'll need to get him going if they want to try and at least make things harder on the rest of the league. And then Scott Wedgwood will be making his second start in Arizona colors here. And really, you know, I think at this point, have to consider – or I'm sorry, it'll be I apologize. It'll be his fifth start, second straight in a row. But I would say he actually hasn't looked too bad. And it'll be interesting to see what they do when Carter Hutton comes back, if they're able to split the crease between the two of them, if they decide to roll with Wedgwood. But no real update on Carter Hart at this point.
In Boston, they've played fewer games than most of their teams in their division so far this year. They went 2-1 in a lighter schedule, and Jeremy Swayman receded for two of those wins with four goals against. He's actually outplayed Linus Ullmark by quite a margin in the nets, and that's a bit of a surprise and maybe a concern for the Bruins. If Ullmark doesn't start to live up the hefty salary that he's being paid, that could become a bit of a problem there. But Swayman's looking good, and I'm hearing little whispers that Tuukka Rask might not be long for the sidelines and may also wind up being a part of this mix. Not that he's signed yet with Boston, but he's already indicated that he won't play anywhere else and he would like to continue his career at some point this season. Offensively, again, the perfection line leading the scoring parade, David Pastrnak with 5 points, Bergeron and Marchand with four apiece. But they're getting good work out of Charlie Coyle in the second line role at center, and he's going to have help coming off the IR in Nick Foligno, who's finally ready to join the club after a bit of a lengthy stay on the sidelines with an injury. They're going to try him out at second line on the right wing. I think that's a bit of a reach for Foligno. He thrived more in a third line role in the last couple of stops in his career, but it remains to be seen if he finds some of that Boston stardust and gets to perform at a higher level than we've seen recently.
In Buffalo, it's, you know, more of the same from what we're seeing from a lot of clubs, a bit of a war of attrition here. Casey Mittelstadt still sidelined. Obviously, Alex Tuck, we haven't gotten a chance to see yet. And Victor Olofsson remains out of action in addition to Craig Anderson. So it's been Dustin Tokarski in their last three games, picked up a pair of wins there. And perhaps most importantly for this club is Jeff Skinner continues to produce at a decent rate for them. And decent, you know, when you compare to last year, had two goals and one assist in the last week, although all three of those points came against your Leafs. Although fortunately for you, Paul, Toronto was able to pull off the win over Buffalo, unlike somebody else's club recently.
Yeah, we won't talk about our clubs until a little bit later in the show, but interesting point by you. Up next, we look at the Carolina Hurricanes. They're leading the league, AJ, and went 2-1 last week. Of course, the signature player on the first line, Sebastian Aho, leading the scoring parade with 4 points. And he's riding shotgun with him as Andrei Svechnikov with 3 assists. Seth Jarvis is the guy that completes that unit, and he automatically qualifies for my sidekick tryout theory, at least. You got to keep an eye on this guy in DFS play if he's going to get to play in that high-rent district going forward. He hasn't really scored consistently enough to land a permanent gig in the NHL, but this is as good a shot as he's ever had. So I'm going to keep an eye out to see if he does make good on it. And in more good news, they get Brett Pesce back in the lineup. He's been dealing with a bit of an undisclosed injury, and he could play tonight, as I understand it. That's the news I'm hearing anyway. So over to you with the Calgary notes.
Yeah, for the Flames here, you know, they made an interesting move at practice today that I think is important to note. They flipped Sean Monahan and Mikael Backlund. So it's going to be Backlund who plays with Andrew Mangiapane, who is coming off a real good week with 2 goals in his last 4 games, alongside Blake Coleman. So I'm a little surprised to see that move, especially when you consider Monahan had 3 assists in the last week. And the other thing that they're going to need here to figure out for how, you know, hot this team really started, they had a real good October. November has been a bit of a letdown, specifically Markstrom. In his last 6 games, it's just 1-2-3, a 2.32 goals against average, which says to me, it's not really a Markstrom problem, right? Like 2.32, that's pretty good. Save percentage, 9.16. Like, yeah, okay, maybe if you want to be nitpicky, maybe you want him closer to 9.2 here. But really, to me, it speaks to an offensive problem, which could explain why they're going to flip things around today. But from a DFS standpoint, you know, just be aware, Monahan, you know, has the better numbers over the last week, but he's going to be playing with what I would argue slightly less talent here in Tyler Pitlick and Dylan Dubé.
Yeah, he must be residing in the Chateau Bow Wow out there in Calgary, in the doghouse with their hardline coach. It's been that way since the beginning of the season. This guy's a top 6 player. I'm not really sure why he's in the third line role. They're paying him a lot of money too. Wonder if there's going to be trade noise around him before too long. Also worth noting there is Oliver Shillington finally getting a look to play in high leverage minutes and rewarding this club offensively with a pair of goals and assists. This guy was a pretty high draft pick not so long ago, and finally rewarding Calgary, at least in some way, for their patience. In Chicago, the Hawks are riding a 4-game winning streak, and my partner has got to be thrilled that Marc-Andre Fleury has been in net for two of the last wins last week with 3 goals against. In fact, look at the last 7 games played by Marc-Andre Fleury, 16 goals against. He's on the top of his game again, and the Hawks are going to be a tougher out going forward, I think, if he can maintain that level. Offensively, of course, they're being led by the duo of DeBrincat and Kane. DeBrincat with three points last week, Kane another 4 points in his ledger. But it's on defense that the most notable contribution is coming from Seth Jones, a guy who they signed in the offseason. He's a monster of a physical specimen and gifted at both ends of the ice. He has 11 points in 11 of his last 12 games. And so that's great, the great news there. But some troubling news is another guy that is on the books for a lot of money there is Tyler Johnson. He's in COVID protocol, and he's also dealing with a neck injury, so it's no wonder that he's landed on the IR, and that's a tough blow for a Hawks team that is finally turning the corner a little bit.
The Blue Jackets are starting to get decent production in their last 3 games out of some of their guys here. Sean Corrale, 2 goals, 1 assist. Alex Texier, 2-1. Jacob Voracek, 1 goal and 2 assists as well. So a number of guys finding some offensive production here. But the problem is for Columbus fans is over that stretch, the net mining has been pretty bad, to be perfectly honest with you. Elvis Merzlikins, 1-1 with a .882 save percentage. And Jonas Korpisalo lost his only start, in which he gave up 4 goals on just 28 shots. So really, while the offense seems to be finding a bit of a groove, I mean, they're not blowing anybody out by any stretch of the imagination, but guys are producing that you expect to. They need better on the back end, and you really have to wonder – you know, it's not an injury issue. They've got all of their defensemen. Certainly, they would look better if they still had Seth Jones. They don't have Max Domi. They don't have Patrick Laine. right now due to illness and coming out of the COVID protocols in Domi's case. But you really can't blame that right now, in my opinion. This looks more like a defensive problem, which is interesting when you consider their previous coach, John Tortorella, was such a hawk when it came to, protecting the net and playing defensive hockey.
Yeah, AJ, and I'm looking at that second line, very thin when you consider Igor Shinnikov and Cole Sillinger playing alongside Jacob Voracek, the one veteran on that group, but the other two guys were not players that we talked about even in our preseason scouting of this team. So they're really hurt by the injuries of the two big names you mentioned, Domi and Laine, but still managing to stay afloat based on the quality of the net mining pretty much over anything else that's happened on this team. The Colorado team, the Avs, are still without Nathan MacKinnon, but they're scoring a ton, and it's no wonder they went 3-0 last week. Darcy Kuemper receiving for all three wins with a total of 5 goals against. Consider Rantanen with 6 points, Landeskog with 4 points, Kadri on a tear with 7 points last week, Girard on the back end with 6 points, Makar with 4, all kinds of scoring going on. The one downside note among all these is JT Compher has been put on the IR. He's going to be out for about a month with a neck injury. They added Nicholas Obey-Kubel, a guy who played in the Philadelphia organization, and I saw a couple of very negative scouting reference to this guy, wondering if the Avs are going to get anything out of him. Scouts said this guy has zero hockey IQ and he's a numbskull. Those aren't my words. Those are scouting references that are leaked, and all I can say is, yikes, I don't know what Colorado thinks they're getting there. I mean, if he couldn't play in Philadelphia, what makes anybody think he's going to thrive in Colorado? I'm not sure, other than to say maybe it's a rising tide that lifts all boats.
I mean, when you lose Compher on top of the fact that MacKinnon's going to be out until early January or early December here, you kind of just need bodies, right? So, maybe that's part of it. A guy with some NHL experience that can fill in a spot, at least until one of those guys can come back. In Dallas, it's been all Jason Robertson of late, 2 goals and 2 assists, including a 3-point performance on Tuesday against Detroit. This kind of relative unknown is riding a 4-game point streak, which includes a duo of multi-point efforts in total on the year. It's 3 goals and 6 assists in 8 games. So Jason Robertson, I call him a relative unknown. I was obviously thinking of somebody else after his rookie year last year that saw him 45 points in 51 games. I'm confusing him with Pearson here. Apologies there. Robertson just picking up where he left off last year, playing on the top line with Rupe Hintz and Joe Pavelski, and Hintz for his part, 2 goals and 1 assist in the last week. Look, we've talked about this team and, Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn not doing enough. Those guys each had a goal in their last 2 games over the last week. And yeah, I would argue that's still not enough, but they're finding other guys, younger guys that are stepping in. You have to wonder how long Benn and Seguin might, be retained by the club here in terms of their long-term future in Dallas, just when you have, the kind of cap hits that these guys carry. For his part, Seguin is 9.8, Benn is 9.5. They're under contract for forever, so they would need somebody to take the load here. But obviously, it's the young guys that are carrying the weight instead.
And in Detroit, we're starting to see a little bit more of that than maybe they would like on the back end, but the news is really good. We'll get to that in a sec. But topping the news wire in Motor City is the fact that Dylan Larkin, he got 4 goals and 1 assist last week, but he's now in COVID protocol. He was actually pulled from the ice during the middle of a hockey game when his results came through. So he got the bad news and was banished. And we won't see him probably. He has to produce a couple of positive tests, but we could be looking at about a 10-day absence if things don't go well in that regard. Lucas Raymond continues to light it up offensively. He's got a first-line role now to play with. He got 4 points last week, but his new center is going to be Pia Sutter, and Michael Rasmussen moves up to the center role of the second unit. And then on the fence, Troy Stetcher may need surgery. He's dealing with an undisclosed injury at the moment. That's going to be a bit of a blow to a defense that now will feature a couple of youngsters among their top four. Philip Ronick is a guy that we talked about a lot in the last couple of years. We thought he'd be their signature player on the blue line. But, of course, Moritz Seider has kind of lapped him a little bit in the early going this year and getting more of those minutes. They're both playing with veterans Danny DeKeyser and Nick Leddy to round out that top four. And it's a good thing they got a good look in the nets with Nedeljkovic and Grice. But I wonder if their goals against averages will both creep up north of three if they're going to rely on two of their top four defensemen being primarily offensive types, and three of the four certainly not too well versed in the defensive end of their rink at all.
Well, quick update on Larkin there. He did return to practice just before we went on the air here, Paul. So it seems like maybe a false positive situation, or maybe the initial test was unconclusive and they had to run another one. So not really sure. Maybe we'll find out more after they wrap up their practice today. But he is on the ice, which would seem to indicate he's not going to miss any additional time here after, as you said, being pulled from that game. For the Edmonton Oilers, look, if I am a coach of the other team, I'm just going to tell you, for the love of God, stay out of the penalty box. Like, come on. They're converting at 42.6%, which is an astronomical number. And it shows in their stats. Leon Draisaitl, 7 goals in the last 4 games, 5 coming with the man advantage. Connor McDavid had 6 points in the last 4 games. 4 of those were scored with the power play. Nugent Hopkins, 3 of 5 points with the power play here. Like, these guys are going to destroy you if you give them the opportunity here. It's just, it boggles my mind that the one thing you got to do, they can't seem to figure out. In terms of the netminding, Mike Smith is still out. Mikko Koskinen has looked downright bad of late. Something that, you know, flashes we had seen last year. You know, when he first came in after Mike Smith got hurt, you kind of felt like, okay, maybe he's kind of turned a corner, went on a pretty extensive winning streak. He's still 3-1 in his last 4 games. It's kind of hard to harp on a guy too much when he's getting wins. But let's look at the goals allowed here. You're looking at a 4.31 goals against average in those 4 games. Like, that is clearly not good enough. He was actually pulled from Tuesday's contest in favor of Stuart Skinner, who's going to get the nod tonight. So for those of you looking at DFS netminders, it's going to be Stuart Skinner going in between the pipes for the Oilers tonight.
Well, AJ, you made me smile when you gave me the Dylan Larkin news, because I got him in a couple of my fantasy hockey leagues. Let me try that again with the Florida notes here. When I talk about Alex Barkov's injury, he's a guy that I have on a couple of those teams as well. He's listed as week to week with an awful knee-on-knee collision that I saw on TV. I don't know that he's going to come back too soon. He's listed as week to week in the notes that I have seen and heard. He got a goal and 2 assists in his 3 games last week. Jonathan Huberdeau picked up a couple of goals as well, but veteran Frankie Vetrano continuing to provide steady secondary scoring with a couple of helpers despite his third-line status. Now we're looking at Bennett and Lundell as the two top centers here for the foreseeable future, and the precipice that Florida's on at the top of the division is threatened, I think, if Barkov's out for any extended period of time. In the Nets, though, surprising to note that Sergei Bobrovsky is 7-0 with a 178 goals against average, 94.2 save percentage, significantly outplaying the highly touted Spencer Knight. 4-2 is his mark with a 328 goals against and 887 goals against average. Save percentage. AJ, we got to talk about this a little bit because Spencer Knight was highly touted. It's very early in the season. He's still on a very good team. He's got plenty of time to right himself, but in his first couple of cups of coffee here, not overly impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that speaks to why you saw Bobrovsky take all 3 of the last games. Now they're going to go back tonight for tonight's game, which a bit of an opportunity for a bounce back as they're facing New Jersey again. And that was the last time he was out. They put 6 up on him in 30 shots. So he'll get a chance at redemption tonight. And for for those of you out there that might be Panthers fans, you're certainly hoping for a bounce back there, or if you have him in your fantasy leagues. But I think at this point, we have to expect Bobrovsky will carry the bulk of the workload moving forward.
And you're not telling me that Barkov skated at practice today, are you?
I am not. No sign of Alexander Barkov at today's practice. Okay. For LA, they're having a bit of an offensive issue the last week. One goal apiece from Kopitar, Athanasiou, Lemieux, and Grundstrom. And that, you know, includes a shutout performance against Washington last night. Certainly a thing slipping there. Now, they are going to get Victor Arvidsson back. I think that's a significant boost for them. He played last night, 4 shots on goal in his first game back, and that's without really any power play time. But I would expect as he kind of gets himself back up to full game fitness, so those power play opportunities will come. And he could hopefully help them rebuild that offense that was kind of, doing pretty well at the start of the season, especially during their extended winning streak that they put together there at the end of October and into November. Things looking up for LA despite some recent struggles.
Yeah, and you got to give credit to Jonathan Quick. 4-4 is the record. 188 goals against average, 94% save percentage. And I wanted to highlight Alex Iafallo. He's been steadily improving in the last couple of years, but I think he's ready for a breakout year based on the 13 points in 16 games played. It's a career best pace for him. So the offense is coming around to match up with a defensive focus here. Minnesota went 1-2. The bottom six types have kind of helped with scoring recently. Rem Pitlick with 3 goals. Ryan Hartman has moved up from a third line to a second line role, picking up 11 points in 16 games played. This guy's a sneaky good DFS play right now, as he's got the plum assignment between Kevin Fiala and Matt Zuccarello. One guy a proven sniper, the other guy one of the better playmaking wingers that I see in the league. I'm surprised that Cam Talbot has started 12 of the 15 games here, partner over Kakkonen and the Nets. He had a very nice rookie season, did Kakkonen, and they're goals against averages are both right around 3, Talbot slightly below and Kakkonen slightly above. So I'm not really as sure about this discrepancy of starting assignments. They also get some good news from the infirmary as Jordan Greenway is back from the IR and he's going to be back in his left wing role on the top line.
For Montreal, they have brought back Cole Caulfield today from the AHL. He had a pretty good stint while he was down there, put up 5 points in 6 games for them. So you like to see that from Caulfield, kind of rediscovering that offensive upside, and hopefully that'll translate once he gets back at the NHL level. You know, prior to his demotion there, he was pointless in 4 straight, had yet to score a goal this season. Certainly a far cry from the player that came blazing onto the scene last year and into the postseason. They've got some significant concerns in the net, though. That's Jake Allen is out with a concussion. He did skate this morning, speaking of guys who skated, Paul, but is not expected to play. They still don't have Carey Price, who's, in addition to Price having stepped away from the team, he was dealing with that knee injury ahead of time. So they're going to go with Caden Primo against the Penguins tonight. Him instead of Samuel Montembeau, but really it's not good news either way to have, really. We've talked in the past about Jake Allen being one of the better backups in the league, when all things are on the up and up for the Habs, having Price start and Allen to back him up is quality. But now they're without either of those guys, and it kind of stretches the depth of their organization.
And one team that's starting to get some quality, I'll say, at center ice is the New Jersey Devils, AJ. They went 1-1-1 last week. We've talked for a while about Jack Hughes. He's dealing with a shoulder injury, and he'll be back in early December. And you wonder how things are going to shake out in the middle position when he does return, because not only is Nico Hischier performing, he's got 6 points in his last 6 games, but Dawson Mercer has been a real revelation and headed for a breakthrough season himself with 2 goals and 2 helpers. He's locked in at the center position on the second scoring line there for now. And on the back end, Dougie Hamilton is delivering offense as expected with 2 goals and 1 helper last week. Jasper Bratt and Pavel Zacha also chipping in with some secondary scoring with 5 and 3 points respectively. So there's more good news than bad to report in the Devils' situation, and it hasn't been that way for quite some time.
In the Music City, good news up until Tuesday's matchup with Detroit that saw, or Toronto rather, that saw them blanked. But prior to that, they had put up 4 goals apiece in each of their previous 3 games. Guys contributing there, Matt Duchene, 3 goals, 2 assists in his last 3 contests. Mikael Granlund, 1 goal and 4 helpers. Roman Josi, of course, continuing to rack up points with 2 goals and 2 assists over that stretch as well. And really, you know, they'll get a bonus day off. They're one of the teams that will be affected by the Ottawa Senators shutting down for a couple of games. They were expected to play them tonight. Instead, Nashville won't be back in action until Saturday's matchup with Montreal.
And then, AJ, that leaves me to talk about the New York Islanders. This is a team that's on a 4-game losing streak. They're finally going to come home, though, after an incredible 13 games on the road. They didn't spend the whole time on the road. They came back during gaps in that schedule for time. But they finally get to open up their brand-new arena this week, and I wonder if that will change their fortunes. Those fortunes, in fact, took a bit of a blow on the ice as well with the news that Pulock, one of their top defensemen, is out with a lower body injury. He'll be missing the next 4 to 6 weeks. And up front, there's a bit of an impact as well on the COVID side with Josh Bailey being sidelined there. That's afforded Kiefer Bellows to get another look at a top 6 left wing opportunity. He has had a couple of chances in the past. He was a high scorer in junior. Hasn't really translated at the NHL level, but it would be good to see Matthew Barzal get going, and that would be the best thing that Kiefer Bellows might have going for him. But Barzal's really struggled offensively out of the gate this year, so maybe the home cooking is something that will change this club's fortunes, and we'll look forward to seeing that and the new arena later this week.
Well, you mentioned one New York club on a 4-game losing streak. Their other team, the Rangers, is on a 4-game winning streak right now, powered by their net minding. And primarily, it's been Igor Shesterkin this season, who's been phenomenal. He gave up 5 goals in his last 2 contests and really has put together a very strong start to the year. And it's not just the net minding either, though. You've got guys throughout the lineup that you expect to produce are doing so. Ryan Strome, 4 assists in the last 3 games. Chris Kreider, 3 goals. They're finally getting something out of Kaapo Kakko. He had 2 goals and 1 assist in the last 3 games. Jacob Trouba, Adam Fox, the list goes on and on of guys that are finding ways to contribute here. There's really not a lot to say about this club in terms of negativity right now. The offense is there on both sides of the ice. The net minding has been solid. And I would not want to be facing them tonight if I were you, Paul.
Well, and nobody's going to be facing the Ottawa Senators tonight. You mentioned that. They were 1-2 in their last 3 games. We'll get to that Leaf-Ranger game a little bit later. Don't you worry. but half the Ottawa club is in COVID protocol, partner, and their next start is scheduled for November 22nd at Colorado. Drake Batherson, probably the biggest name that joined the COVID protocols recently. Devin Toews somehow managed to score 4 points for this team, this decimated club, last week. He's a young defenseman who's getting plenty of ice time, and that's kind of the focus and the opportunity here for some of the younger players to get a look-see. And not to say that Devin Toews is a raw grass-green rookie, but a lot of kids are getting a look right now. So it's an unprecedented opportunity for them to open some eyes in this tough time that the club is going through. We wish the Ottawa Senators the best in terms of getting past this impact of COVID right now.
In Philadelphia, it's not good news on the back end. After they had Ryan Ellis out of action for 9 games, it looks like here. He played on the 13th against Dallas and then was out again on Tuesday. And now will be sidelined for 4 to 6 weeks. Yikes. They're not going to do surgery for what they're classifying as a lower body injury. But certainly it's not good news to have him back on the shelf here. Seems that he re-aggravated the same issue. And even if he's on the 4 week side of that timeline, you're talking about 14 games moving forward that they're going to be without Ryan Ellis, which is a huge blow. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, technically, if you want to, you know, take the games he didn't play out of the mix, he's on a 4-game point streak. He's just only played in those 4 games this year. He did pick up an assist in that one game he played. So really tough news for them. Nick Steeler will carry the load in terms of the guy that steps into the lineup, but I would expect guys like Keith Yandel and Rasmus Ristolainen to see more minutes with him out. A similar situation in the forward groups. They did get Kevin Hayes back after that that core surgery. He's got 2 points in his 2 games back. So good start back for him, but they're going to be without more of a depth guy. But Patrick Brown suffered a thumb injury. They're classifying him as week to week and awaiting results of an MRI there. Again, hopefully, you know, for their depth, they're not going to need surgery, but it's, you know, been a rough kind of injury news couple of days for the Philadelphia Flyers.
And at this point, we're going to take a bit of a break because we have our own salary cap issues. We need sponsors to pay for AJ's hefty salary here. So with that, we're going to take a bit of a breather. You're listening to the RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. We'll be back to you right after these messages.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ. But before we get back into our teams, let's have another word from our main sponsor at Owner's Box. Over to you, AJ.
Are you looking for a new way to play fantasy sports? Owner's Box offers 2 game types, tournament, salary cap, and head-to-head live drafts. All new players will receive a $25 bonus when they deposit $10 or more on the platform. Be sure to check out Owner's Box new Superflex salary cap game, a revolutionary new way to play fantasy football that brings a new strategic alternative to the traditional season-long formats and daily fantasy contests. The Superflex salary cap format, available only on Owner's Box, removes the kicker and defensive position slots and focuses only on offensive players. Users will build their 9-player lineup while staying under the $50,000 salary cap. Large prize pools will be available throughout the season. The super flex position gives the user the option to select an additional quarterback, running back, wide receiver, or tight end. Ultimately, it makes the quarterback a premium position versus other fantasy formats. And don't worry, listeners, Owner's Box also has NHL contests, including GPP tournaments, for their unique one-week fantasy format. Play the Owner's Box salary cap contest for free. Use promo code DREW9, that's D-R-E-W 9, for a free $10 entry into the Sunday-only salary cap contest.
All right, let's give AJ a chance to collect his breath for a second. Before we continue, I'll get him to remind you how to get in touch with us during the upcoming week.
Yeah, of course. As always, we invite you to send your comments and questions about the show, about hockey, really about anything we're willing to discuss with you. On Twitter, you can follow me at AJSchultz24, and you can reach Paul, the Statsman, at Statsman22. We'll be happy to share the best questions. If we get some really good ones, we're happy to talk that at the top of our show as well.
And AJ, we begin this part of the show every week with a look at the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'll just give a cursory glance at the top stats that I saw in a week that saw them go 1-3. Evan Rodriguez has been a surprising and consistent scorer for you guys with 3 goals and 1 assist last week. Jake Guentzel, one of the guys that we're expecting more of that sort of thing, he delivered with 2 goals and 1 helper. And Crystal Tang has continued to supply offense from the back end, leading that group with his quality, skill, and experience. He had 3 assists. I'm hearing little things about Evgeny Malkin on the horizon. AJ, can you begin your Penguins notes with an update on his status?
Yeah, so Malkin had been doing some on-ice workouts the last couple of weeks. We've seen him get some game action in there, or some practice action in there. But really, the update remains the same, that they're really, that initial timeline they've been talking about of January or late December, early January remains the case. And I really don't think much has changed there. They've been adamant about that for a while. So really just more status quo as far as Malkin goes. Outside of that, look, I was glad I was on vacation last week and just, spending time with family and enjoying Florida. I didn't get a lot of time to watch those dog duty games to avoid us getting an explicit rating here. I'm glad I missed that. Losing to Ottawa 6-3, losing to Washington 6-1, and then losing to Buffalo. I don't have a lot of confidence in Pittsburgh right now. Hopefully they can figure out whatever's going on, because it hasn't been good. In Seattle, speaking of hasn't been good, they're riding 5 straight losses, which, Jared McCann was asked today about that situation. And basically he just said, like, we've been shooting ourselves in the foot. Certainly McCann's one of the players that has been producing for them, 3 goals in their last 3 games. Jordan Eberle has 4 points. James Schwartz has 4 points as well over that stretch. But they are going to need better from the rest of the team if they're going to put together any sort of winning season. But Philip Grubauer just has not been the same goalie that was a Vezina Trophy candidate last year, responsible for all 3 of their most recent losses with a .849 save percentage over that stretch.
In San Jose, AJ, they have been getting a lot more offense than I thought they might this season. Logan Couture, their captain, is scoring at a career-best point-per-game pace through 14 games played. Timo Meier adding to a nice start for himself with 3 points. We know what they have in a guy like Thomas Hertl, another quality scoring machine. But it's in the nets that there's a story that's playing itself out, with James Reimer outplaying Aiden Hill by a wide margin in the nets and finally starting to get a larger share of the goalie starts lately. He's got a 4-2 record, a .173 goals against, and a .94.3 save percentage. So there's some positive notes coming out of San Jose, something we didn't really say too much of in that regard in the last couple of seasons.
In St. Louis, it's a 4-game losing streak for them. And really, the offense has been okay from some of the guys. You've got players like Jordan Kyrou four goals and one assist recently. And then you've got, you know, Tarasenko with three goals in the last four games. Robert Thomas, seven assists. So it's certainly the offense finding ways to produce here, but the back end obviously letting them down a little bit. When you consider Binnington 0-2-1 in his last three games with an 8.45 save percentage. Joel Holfer got a start in there as well, an 8.75 in that lone outing. So tonight they're actually going to turn things over to Ville Husso in basically what I would call an attempt to find somebody that can play a goalie for them. Husso has made just one appearance for them October 25th against LA. It was a winning shutout effort, stopped all 34 goals that he faced, but he, you know, missed a significant chunk of time, partially due to COVID protocol. So that's been a factor as well. But I would say things are maybe wide open for him right now with as you know, difficult as Binnington's recent stretch has been. Husso, if he comes in and puts up a performance like he had most recently, they could ride the hot hand for a little while here.
Yeah, they got to do something to change the fortunes there, and that might be the trick. When in, you're in is the net mining mantra at this point. In Tampa, they had a light schedule last week, but they won both of their starts, and Andrei Vasilevskiy proceeded for both with a total of three goals against. Surprise, surprise, he's still the best goalie in the world for my money. Up front, Braden Point with 3 points and Victor Hedman with 3 points led the offense. But on the downside, another injury note worth talking about, Eric Cernak, who was locked into a top four presence in the back end, is listed as week to week with an upper body injury. That means more minutes and a bit of a reshuffling to veteran Jan Ruta, who is probably the best behind Sergachev and Hedman in terms of the offensive upside to his game. It might even include Ryan McDonagh in that mix. He's been more of a defensive-minded guy in the last couple of seasons. Another note offensively up front, Matthew Joseph has got a new role with top 6 minutes coming his way on the right wing, and he made good with 3 points last week. So as long as he's getting a look with some scoring types alongside, he might be a very good sneaky value DFS play.
Well, I'll lead us into Toronto, but like you did, Paul, I won't take up too much of the time here and just note that in their last 10 games, they're 9-1. And it shows a little bit of maybe the slow start that they got off to here when you consider, despite going 9-1 with a four game win streak, they're actually still 2 points behind the Florida Panthers for the Atlantic lead. But certainly, you know, we talked about Detroit at one point being atop the Atlantic, and we knew that wasn't going to last. Things have kind of fallen back into place, if you will, with Florida, Toronto, and Tampa leading the way. Boston will be in the mix as soon as they play a few more games. As you said, they've only played 13 compared to Toronto's 17 at this point. So give them a couple more outings and they'll be there as well. And the Atlantic will basically work out like we all expected.
Well, I begin with my concern about Jack Campbell. I'm not concerned about his play. I'm concerned about wearing him out. He's playing way too much hockey, leading the league in minutes played so far. They had hoped that they would have a tandem with Peter Mrazek. He's on the IR for a couple more weeks, it seems. And so they actually gave Joseph Woll a look in a game against Buffalo. And he's not the answer in the near term. Maybe he's still a prospect of some renown going down the road. But they got to get some rest for Campbell somehow and hope that Mrazek, when he comes back, can stay back here. And then I'm looking at the left wing on the Leafs roster here, AJ. Alex Kerfoot looks to be the best of the lot here. And he's the guy that I've been hearing most about in terms of we got to get rid of this contract to make room for the other guys that we need to sign. And that means that the spotlight is on Nick Ritchie, his first line left wing. He's got exactly 0 goals this season. And that's not going to keep him in that job much longer. I mean, the noose is getting tighter there. Lucky for him, Pierre Engvall and Michael Bunting have failed with top six opportunities themselves, and they're relegated to the bottom six roles at the moment, but that's going to be a revolving door. In terms of positive news from the depth of the roster, the tandem of David Kampf and Andre Kasha has finally started to pay some dividends, taking the pressure off the big four up front, and I like what I've seen from these guys at both ends of the rink. Kasha stopped a shot with a headlong dive into a shot last week and was listed as day-to-day. He skated at practice this morning, and they're optimistic that he'll line up again offensively. And then on the fourth line, Wayne Simmons is another guy that I thought they'd get more out of, and it's just not happening for him either. He's been in a long goalless slump as well. So maybe a couple of these guys get off the schneid against the Rangers. Leafs should be ready for them, because the Rangers came in here a couple of weeks ago and beat them, one of the rare home ice losses for Toronto, and you know that the Leafs want to make this a revenge effort tonight. And up next, we're going to talk about the Vancouver Canucks. This is a team in disarray, partner. They're winless in their last five. The GM, Jim Benning, his job seems to be really on the line. He had a public speaking engagement where he was answering questions from the local media in the last 24 hours, and he looked like a ghost, quite frankly, AJ. They're not scoring. The top two centers, Horvat scoreless in his last five games, Pettersson scoreless in his last four, Demko not impressing in the nets with a 5-7 record year-to-date, 3.31 the goals against average, and a save percentage under 90%. None of these numbers are good. The only interesting note here I'll add to underscore the troubles is Tanner Pearson, a career third liner, is their top left winger on their roster with only 6 points in 17 games. Something's got to give, and I think it will very soon.
Well, something has to give eventually, you would think, for the Vegas Golden Knights. They just can't get a lineup, a healthy lineup here. You have a guy in Jonathan Marchessault who's on a six-game point streak, during which he has 7 goals, 2 helpers, and now, unfortunately, as of Tuesday, entered the league's COVID protocols. They do have Mark Stone back. He has, you know, a pair of assists in his 2 games back, so that's certainly a step in the right direction. But they're still without Pacioretty, Carlson, Patrick, obviously Eichel. We knew that going in. William Carrier, Shea Theodore picked up a win, an injury after crashing into the boards. Alex Martinez is now on IR. He's missed 2. We'll have to miss at least 1 more. So it just, you know, just banged up and can't seem to get a full lineup together. I mean, you look at all the talent here, and you would expect as soon as they do, they're going to start rolling over teams in the Pacific. I mean, they already are doing well. They're sitting in fourth considering all the absences here, but that I question if that's going to last if they can't get these guys on the ice soon.
And in Washington, you can say the same thing. This team is missing no fewer than 5 regulars from their top 3 offensive lines. Notwithstanding that, they had a busy schedule last week, and they went 4-1 over the last 7 days, AJ. In the nets, Samsonov receded for 2 of those wins with 3 goals in total allowed, and they're getting scoring from all over the roster here. Connor Sheary has moved up to the right wing on the top line, and he is now a candidate for my sidekick theory, getting 3 points in that role. Garnet Hathaway picked up 6 points, including 5 goals from his third line right wing opportunity. Tom Wilson, the original sidekick that caused me to realize this theory a couple of years ago, is piling up points on a regular basis. We've talked about him regularly in that regard. He added 4 more points last week. Kuznetsov centering the top line with 5 points, Ovechkin with 5 points. The scoring has been there, no question about it. And another note among the rosters moving around is Connor McMichael moves into the second line role at center ice, as this team, as I said, is missing 5 regulars from those top 3 units.
The Winnipeg Jets maybe had some question marks after their first 3 games of the season when Connor Hellebuyck gave up a combined 14 goals in those first 3 games. But having said that, he is absolutely seems to be back to his usual self, because he hasn't lost in regulation in 9 straight contests. That's 6-0-3, a 2.51 goals against average. If there's something, if there's a knock on his game at this point, I would say the only glaring absence for a player of his caliber is he doesn't have a shutout yet this year. He's usually good for anywhere from 4 to 6 of those a season. So you expect one of those will be coming sooner rather than later. But the formula for them is back to working right now. Again, if there are some other concerns on the Winnipeg Jets, you know, I would point to the fact that Blake Wheeler is not putting up quite the same numbers that we normally expect out of him. He did have two assists in the last three games and certainly seems to be trending in the right direction, but he remains goalless on the year, which will be a bit of a red flag for fantasy owners, especially when you consider last season was the first time since 2012-13 that he failed to hit the 20-goal mark. Obviously, last year you would just chalk that up to the shortened season, but at this point, 0 goals in 10 games starts to get a bit concerning. But again, it's Blake Wheeler. You have to imagine those goals will start coming eventually. Guys not struggling for goals right now are Kyle Connor with 3 in the last week, Scheifele with 2, Dubois with 2 as well.
And that concludes our look around the league. Now it's time for our DFS segment, where on a weekly basis, AJ and I try to position you, our listeners, to win some money by playing the games on those platforms. We've enjoyed doing it for the whole time we've been on this program, and we've done it with a lot of success. So really hope that you guys pay attention at this point to try and win yourself some dough. And with that, I'll turn to my partner, AJ, as he gives you the best look that he can find among the DraftKings opportunities tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to start with a bit of a San Jose stack tonight. I mentioned, we talked a little bit about St. Louis being on a 4-game losing streak, Ville Husso making just his second start of the year. So there's some discounted sharks that I think you can get tonight. It starts with Logan Couture up front. He's coming in at just 5,300, which is pretty cheap on DraftKings in terms of centers right now. He's rolling with 3 goals and 2 assists in his last 6 games. Basically, he's been scoring every other night. So if that trend continues, he is due to score in tonight's game. And because he doesn't really break the bank for you, you can pair him up with line mate Timo Meier here at 6,000. Again, another player, he missed some time. But if you take the games he missed out, he's on a 3-game point streak. And in fact, in terms of games he's played, he's only failed to at least get 1 point in 1 of 10 appearances this season. So both of these guys will pair up on their top power play unit as well. My other center is going to be Roope Hintz for Dallas, 5,600. So really not breaking the bank at all tonight. When you consider two guys under 6,000, when the top of the price range is Connor McDavid at 95, Leon Draisaitl at 91, and Austin Matthews at 8,500, respectively. You're really doing pretty well to save up and get two guys that are producing relatively regularly right now. Speaking of that, I think at this point, you almost just have to have Troy Terry in your lineup. Paul, I don't know if you have checked his price on FanDuel. I'd be interested to see if it's significantly higher, but on DraftKings, he's still coming in at 5,500, and you're talking about a guy on a 15-game point streak. Literally, the only game he didn't score in that he played in was the season opener. Since then, has been on an absolute tear. Like I said, 14-game point streak here, 11 goals over that stretch, 9 assists, 6 of those points coming with a man advantage. Like, until his price creeps up on DraftKings, or he hits some sort of skid, I think you have to consider using him. I'm going to revert to said same sidekick theory for my next guy. Not exactly blowing up the points right now, but Jason Zucker comes in at just 3,700. Needs some cheaper options here. He's goalless in his last 9. I think that'll serve to lower his drafted percentage here. But his shots over that stretch are sitting at 26, so just about 3 per game. And he's getting power play opportunities as well. So I think Zucker is in a good spot. And they're, as I said, Caden Primo going to start tonight for Montreal. So maybe a good opportunity to snag some Penguins here. We were doing our show with DraftKings earlier today. And Paul, you mentioned actually Shane Gostisbehere being on a tear. And I had to look it up for myself because I almost didn't believe it with how much he'd struggled in previous seasons. But as you pointed out earlier today, 13 points in 16 games at 4,600. That's a steal on DraftKings. And then I'll pair him up with Miro Heiskanen, 6,300. He is another player just really hot right now. And the one thing I mentioned about Heiskanen, technically, when you head over to RotoWire, he's going to be listed on the number two power play unit, and that might be a red flag to some people. But again, you look at these units, they're really splitting up some of their talents here. I mean, the number two unit, quote unquote, has Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, Dennis Gurianov, and Ryan Sutter. Like, that's a 1B, if you have to call it that. So really, I like Miro Heiskanen. A little pricier at 6,300, but I think worth it. And then my utility spot, I'm going to go with a guy that's playing, for lack of a better term, out of position here. You've got Ryan Hartman at 4,300. I believe you pointed out earlier in the show, he's going to line up with two of the big guns in Minnesota here. They kind of shuffled things around at practice today. They had been using Kirill Kaprizov with Matt Zuccarello, but it's going to be Fiala, Hartman, Zuccarello on the second line. And I like that spot that he's in for 4,300. Between the pipes, I'm just going to keep it simple. I know we mentioned his struggles to start the year, but Spencer Knight and the Florida Panthers are the heaviest favorite to win tonight. Last I saw, they were minus 185 on the DraftKings Sportsbook here. So heavy favorites playing at home against New Jersey. I think it's a decent spot to pay up, even though you do have a lot of options with an 11-game slate.
And I'll talk about that 11-game slate for a minute, AJ, to headline my strategy. I had to look for where I think the biggest mismatches could be, and I'm looking at the Calgary visit to Buffalo. So I'm stacking the Flames tonight, and I'm looking at Pittsburgh and Montreal. I'm surprised you weren't all over that one, because I think that's another stack opportunity. And the third one that I identified is Tampa Bay's visit to Philadelphia. So with that, let me swing into mine. But before I do, I'm going to say I did say I wanted to have a word about the Rangers-Leafs tilt. Last time we met about a month ago was a 2-1 hockey game. A lot of scoring ability on the ice for both teams that night, just as it is tonight. But I expect more of the same. I think it's going to be a titanic defensive struggle, despite the fact that there's so much talent on the ice. There's outstanding talent in the nets. I think the Leafs are going to flip the script. I think Toronto's going to win 3-1, but I don't see any value in picking the Skaters in that one, other than maybe the goalie to win the tilt. But I'm looking at my lineup as follows. Anthony Cirelli is going to be one of my centers. He's playing actually on the same line as Braden Point, but they've got them both listed as center for $4,200 and $7,600 respectively. That means I'm fading the likes of Matthews and McDavid. McDavid has a tough matchup too. Connor Hellebuyck, I mentioned on today's show at DraftKings that he must be in the heads of the Edmonton Oilers. He's beaten them five straight times, and they won quite handily along the way. I think they're making it six tonight, and that's why I'm avoiding the Edmonton team, and I hope there's a lot of big ownership on their big guns as a result, because I'm going to ride the likes of Cirelli and Point as two-thirds of that top line as my center positions for $4,200 and $7,600 respectively. On the wings, you mentioned Troy Terry, AJ. I'm fading him because he's a lot more expensive on FanDuel. He's $7,000, so I went no higher than that with all of my picks at that position, including Matthew Tkachuk, who's right at seven mark for his assignment against the Buffalo Sabres. I also included Johnny Gaudreau as part of my wingers, looking at that same matchup. Gaudreau and Tkachuk both averaging over 13 points per game in FanDuel play so far this year. I think they're going to fatten up those numbers against the lowly Sabres and an American Hockey League goalie in the Dustin Tokarski. I assume he's getting the start again. On defense, I went with a tandem of guys I spent a little bit more than I normally do on the back end, AJ. And I look at Cam Fowler at home against Carolina tonight. That's the league's best team coming to town. But Fowler's been on a tear since the opening faceoff this season. The points galore, and factoring in with block shots as well. And $4,300 is his price tag. He's also the anchor of the power play on this team. And then Tony D'Angelo, I talked to him earlier today. He's played the solid citizen so far for the visiting club from Carolina, and really cleaned up his act off the ice. And on the ice, he's been what he always was, a scoring machine from the back end. And he, too, is in a plum assignment of quarterbacking that solid power play. I get him for $5,200. I round out the squad with two utility types up front. If you want to call Andre Palat a utility type, do so at your own risk. He's a first-liner on the two-time Stanley Cup champions. And he goes for $5,700, making me get all three of the first-liners from Tampa into tonight's lineup. And I finish up with Jordan Kyrou, who is one of the surprise scorers and breakout stars from the St. Louis Blues. We talked about their struggles. I think they get off the mat tonight in that regard and get a home victory over the visiting Sharks. And Kyrou will be a part of that offense this evening. I paid $6,200 to get him. And then what I always do is look for the softest touch, the biggest win probability on the board. And I think that's in Buffalo tonight, where Jacob Markstrom, you mentioned, he hasn't been the problem with Calgary. He's delivering with the solid goals against, and still, for my money, one of the top three goalies in the league. And I get him for $7,900 in that tasty matchup. So that's my look at this team in FanDuel's panels, and we'll see if we can get into the winner's circle once again. AJ, before we sign off, we got a full slate of games tonight. Which ones catch your eye, or is there anything topical you want to end the show with?
I mean, obviously the Penguins are playing tonight, but I'm not sure how much I really want to watch that game for fear that they're going to lose to Montreal, which will just make me angry. I do like the Rangers-Toronto game. Should be a fun one to watch. And then obviously later in the evening, catching Winnipeg and Edmonton. Again, you mentioned could be offensive, could be a goaltending battle on one side, McDavid versus Hellebuck. So some plenty of options to choose from tonight.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of channel surfing at my house, AJ. And with that, I'm going to get ready for it after editing this show and getting it out there to our listeners. We want to wrap up our fifth week of the regular season, look back at a number of guys breaking out and showing us that they're going to be surprise additions to their clubs this season, bigger surprises than many anticipated. And we've given you a shine the light on them a little bit this week. We thank you for listening to RotoWire Signature Fantasy Hockey Podcast. And we also thank our sponsors at Owner's Box. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. In the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. And as always, we invite you to listen in to podcasts to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.